Good morning and welcome to today's All Sides Weekend Book Edition. I'm Christopher Purdy, and today, fasten your seatbelts, we're going to be talking about everyone's favorite books of 2018. I'm not sure if you mean the best books, I mean the books you really love that you read during this past calendar year. I am delighted to welcome, as always, the wonderful Cassie Rose, who is WOSU's book critic. Her blog is thelongestchapter.com, indispensable for everybody who loves reading and their friends. Robin Nesbitt is here. She is the manager of the Hilliard branch of the Columbus Library. She brings us our quick picks, and this time she's bringing us her best reads of 2018, as is Mark Maxwell, regional manager of Half Price Books. So I'm going to leave the room and take a nap and leave y'all to it. We are going to talk about everybody's best reads from 2018, starting with Cassie Rose.
I will start with my top favorite, which is a book called, or the title is Theory of Bastards by Audrey Shulman. It's a great book. Came out at the beginning of the year. Europa Editions is the publisher, and I love it because of it succeeds on many levels. One of it is a fascinating protagonist. Her name is Frankie, and she is a behaviorist who works with bonobos, who are chimpanzees. It is also, it takes place in the near future, so it's not so far that it's science fiction that you can't relate to. Because where it's sci-fi-ish is that we don't, there are no cell phones or laptops. It is all bodyware, so all that technology is, you know, within our brains or in our bodies. So she is at a new institute. She is studying these chimpanzees. She's flawed in that she is physically challenged, and I think that that brings a dearness to her in a way because she's brilliant. So on the one hand, she's cold and brilliant, and on the other hand, she is physically challenged because of something that happened in her childhood. The turning point happens when there is a dust storm, and this is a nod to climate change. Again, gives you a little bit of the future, and all of the technology shuts down. So then we get into a little bit of Cormac McCarthy on the road because they're on the road with the bonobos. And that brings a little bit of humor into it, too, because you've got some chimpanzees who are, one eats soap and blows bubbles, and another one.
As they, one does.
This really is one does. Another one plays basketball, and another one gets into a, they're in a empty house. They're foraging for food. And he dresses up in, or she dresses up in the clothes, the women's clothes that finds in the closet. So there's humor in it, too. Mm-hmm. It's really, really well done. And I just wish that the book had gotten a little bit more attention.
It has now.
Well, and I'm glad because it is, it's a great book. It does have a very slow beginning. You've got to be patient with it until that turning point comes. But it's very satisfying.
Okay, everybody. Now, people are going to be writing this down so slowly. The title and the author.
It's called Theory of Bastards, and it's by Audrey Shulman, S-C-H-U-L-M-A-N.
Did you know her, her work?
I did not, and I can't remember how I found the book, except that I do follow the new releases of Europa Editions. And when this one came out, I just, I don't know, something in my gut instinct said, this is going to be a good one.
At what point reading it did you know this is going to be your favorite book of the year?
Actually, probably early on, I would say really probably around page 50 or 75, even before the turning point. Because even though I knew there was something in me that was saying, okay, enough of the research, enough of telling me about how you're connecting with the bonobos and watching the behavior, I knew that the author was building to something and that she needed for me to invest the time in what was going on with the bonobos and the relationship. Because ultimately, the book is about relationships, and it's about love, and it's about permanence of place.
The Theory of Bastards. Write this down. Pardon the language, but that's the name of the book. Okay, thank you very much, Cassie Rose. Robin Nesbitt, the Columbus Metropolitan Library. You've got quite the list here. What are your best reads of this year for you personally?
Personally, my absolute favorite was There, There by Tommy Orange. It just won the best fiction, first fiction from the Center of Fiction in New York City this week. And I saw a little bit of Tommy Orange start to do his acceptance speech, which is hilarious. So if you want to, go out and find it on YouTube. It's basically a story of contemporary Native Americans, or as they like to be called, Natives. It's set in Oakland. Oakland really is a character in the book. But the writing is just amazing. And it's also the kind of novel I like where it's told from different perspectives. So it's told from, you know, the different characters, and it weaves together like I had an English teacher once tell me, sort of like an art, I shouldn't say weave, but like an artichoke where you peel a leaf and finally you get to that core, that ending. And that's sort of how I felt about There. I wasn't sure. I'm not a huge literary reader. I tend to be a mystery and suspense reader. That's my go-to genre. But this one I picked up, and I just absolutely loved it. So
that's on everybody's list. That book really made a great impression. The different people are on their way to one place, to a powwow
correct.
In Oakland, California, right?
Correct. Yep. There's a powwow. That's kind of where it culminates. And you're right. It has ended up on lots of lists. Although, as we were talking earlier, it was long listed for the National Book Award, but it didn't make the short list. So I always find it interesting how books make it onto awards lists or don't make it. And so I'm not sure why this one didn't win more.
Because it was a popular favorite since it was first out.
Correct.
It happened right away.
Yeah.
People really grabbed that book. Mark Maxwell, Half Price Books, what do you have for us? I know you were a big fan of There. You were the one who brought it to this program.
Yes, and it certainly is on my list as well. I will actually start with a book that I know you enjoyed as well, Christopher. It's called The Overstory by Richard Powers. So Richard Powers is a major American writer, right? And so all of his books are cause for celebration. But this one is particularly ambitious. So The Overstory has 9 main characters, and they are wildly diverse, but each of them has a particular relationship with trees. Some of them with trees in general, but in some cases they have a relationship with a particular tree. So, for example, there is a young man who is from a farm family in Iowa in which 3 generations of his family have made it their practice to take one picture every month of a particular chestnut tree that grows on their farm. There's another character who is in Vietnam, falls from a plane. His life is saved by a tree. After the war, he comes back to America. He witnesses the devastation of the forest in the Pacific Northwest, and he dedicates his life to being an environmental activist. So all of these characters, their stories never completely converge, although they connect to each other in disparate ways sometimes. But all these characters are drawn in their own way to devote their lives to trees, to the preservation of trees, to the understanding of trees. And more than anything else, this book is a love story or a love letter to trees.
So that's the love story, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Richard Powers' work, and those who are familiar with Richard Powers will know that his work often intersects with science. So there's a lot of scientific content in the work of Richard Powers. There's a lot of really interesting stuff in here about trees. When I was reading it, I went around boring everybody with like how the chestnut tree like left North America. But more than anything else, I think this is a very earnest exploration of man's relationship to nature and how that is changing over time. And I think earnest is the key word for this book. I think in the last 60 years, I think mainstream literary fiction, at least in my mind, has been characterized by a kind of cynical detachment. And I think that what's happening now, at least from my limited perspective, is that writers are realizing that history is moving very quickly and maybe there isn't time for the kind of cynicism that we've practiced in the past. And so I think we're seeing more books now that have a more explicit message. And this one certainly does.
That book is a romance, as you said, in its way, and it's full of heart and it's full of love for the trees, which may
right.
sound ridiculous, but look at the book. It really is not. I found the book very, very moving. It's a rather thick book and the writing is very rich. But so it makes you take your time with it, and you need to take your time with that book.
Indeed. Yeah. It was shortlisted for the Man Booker Prize. Did not win, but I think it will certainly endure.
What were you saying, Cassie, about Richard Powers?
I was saying that I think that he's going to be one of the authors that is going to endure, and that in 50 years, his books will still be on the shelf.
I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend Books. We're talking about everyone's favorite reads of 2018 with Cassie Rose, with Mark Maxwell, and with Robin Nesbitt. How many of your favorite, I'm just curious if you know Robin Nesbitt offhand, how many of your faves became quick picks or vice versa?
Well, there is quick pick.
Yeah.
Another one of my favorites, Educated by Tara Westover, is.
Yes, that was
good. Another one of my favorites, Becoming by Michelle Obama, is.
Yeah.
We were talking before the show. one of what I would call the best of the best of the best of the top Quick Picks is The Hate U Give. We have never taken that off a Quick Pick. It has been, I can't keep it on my shelves. So because we eventually take books off a Quick Pick, they, you know, they run their course and stuff like that. But The Hate U Give has never been taken off a Quick Pick.
The Hate U Give, we talked about this about 6 months ago, and we talked about it more than once on this program. And out there, America, if you haven't read The Hate U Give, read it. The movie came out and it was quite good. I liked the movie a lot. It was faithful to the book. But read the book, because it's very, very important, particularly if you sort of grew up like I did and didn't have a clue. The book to me was very, very authentic.
Yep.
Very authentic indeed. We will be calling out and asking you to call in or email us and tell us about your favorite reads of the year. If we get a big volume of calls, we'll probably just be able to read titles, say thank you, and move on. But we'll want to know what you especially love this year. And speak slowly and distinctly, because I suspect people will be writing it down. Although we, by the way, this program is streamed and archived, so you can always look it up on the WOSU website to reference it later. And before we take our first break, Cassie Rose, give me another favorite.
I think I'm going, there are two. Well, I've got several favorites. But anyway, this one I'm going to talk about, A Million Drops. It was an international bestseller, Victor Del Arbol. And he is very well known in Europe, not well known here, which, again, still I get very surprised about why some of the bestsellers across the pond just don't make it here. This one's a little bit dark. Well, actually, it's a lot dark, because ultimately it is about the evil that, you know, exists within, you know, the human race. But it's also a fascinating crime story. And it's the complication of the story, all of the little threads that the author weaves throughout the novel. It starts with the crime of a woman who is accused of killing a mobster, and she has killed him because he killed her son. And this is in Spain. But where that goes into then, because her brother looks into the case, doesn't believe she did it. And there it all goes back to their father, who in the 1930s got involved in Stalin's Russia. So it's the Spanish War, it's Stalin's Russia, it's how this man survives that and all the people that he knows and that connect to this present day murder. It's the reason it's one of my favorites is because it's not just that I wouldn't say it's a page turner as much as it's that you get involved in it in a way that you can't let go of it, because it's so fascinating the way that the author has done it and the way that the story is being told. It's not easy to go into Stalinist Russia. It's not easy to go into the Spanish Civil War, but these characters are so well done. And you can tell there's not any gratuitous violence that is painted around them, that you can accept it. You can go there because you feel like you're learning something, and you're learning something about the characters and about evil. As much as you see it, you get also why they're driven to that point, which in essence is it's very hard to have compassion for someone who is evil. But when you realize what has driven that person to it, it's not really compassion, but at the same time, it's a kind of understanding.
It's a level of understanding, right. So you sort of have to they make you feel a little empathy.
Yes.
Even in a terrible situation.
Yes. Yeah. It's brilliantly done. It's got a brilliant ending. You don't see it, what's coming. And so that's why it's high on my favorite list.
Title and author again.
It's called A Million Drops, and it's by Victor Del Arbol.
Victor Del Arbol, A Million Drops. I'll throw out one of my favorites of the year, Leonardo da Vinci, the wonderful, sumptuously illustrated biography by Walter Isaacson. Mm-hmm. And with that, we're going to take a break back in very quickly.
Thank you.
We are back. All Sides Weekend Books. I'm Christopher Purdy with WOSU book critic Cassie Rose, with Mark Maxwell, who is regional manager for Half Price Books, and with Robin Nesbitt, the manager of the Hilliard branch of the Columbus Library, talking about everybody's favorite reads of 2008. We have a call from Joanne. Hi, Joanne. Go ahead.
Hi. My favorite book is Woman in the Window by A.J. Finn.
Really, a lot of people enjoyed that book. I liked that very much myself. And mm-hmm. Robin Nesbitt, you're nodding your head there.
I liked it as well. I always say, if you like Hitchcock, read that.
Yeah. Excellent book. Thank you very much. Doug in Columbus has a recommendation. Hi, Doug. Go ahead.
Hey there. How are you? I got two recommendations, actually. One is for a book called They Grew As They Pleased, The Disney Artists at Mid-Century. I know we're not really talking a lot about nonfiction work.
We can. That's fine. Yeah,
it's a terrific study about the artists behind the stories, especially during Disney's golden mid-century era, including Mary Blair, who's probably the profound colorist that Disney really, really loved. As well as I want to make a shout-out to Prologue Bookstore in the Short North, our newest bookstore. And as a former Short North bookseller, I want to wish them lots and lots of luck and go patronize them as well.
Thank you, Doug, for that recommendation. Yes, I was told yesterday at lunch there was a new independent bookstore in the Short North, and I'm always interested to hear about that because I guess they're coming back, the indie bookstores.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good to know there. We are talking about everybody's favorite reads of 2018. I'll throw one up because Cassie Rose and I shared, I believe, The Great Believers by Rebecca Mackay.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that a little bit.
Very good book. It takes place in Chicago and Paris, and Chicago during the 1980s when the AIDS epidemic hit. And she does it very well. You get right into the center of that, what was going on, and the characters who are – it opens with a funeral. And so immediately she draws you into what the gay men are dealing with and the prejudice against them, and even among the families. And then in the present day in Paris, there is a woman she's now grown up, but when she was young, her brother died from AIDS. And so she is in Paris with one or two of his friends that have survived.
Years later,
she's looking for her estranged daughter.
Right. It's a wonderful story. Mm-hmm. The Great Believers by Rebecca Mackay. Highly recommended. It's on my list. I suspect it's on other lists as well as it's on the New York Times. Thank you very much. Book review list. That's good to know. Mark Maxwell, tell me another one.
Ooh, okay. So I brought a book with me that I recently read. It just came out in October, so it's a little late for the literary awards this year, but it's been getting a lot of buzz in literary circles, and I have to say it freaked me right out.
Good.
It's called Melmoth by Sarah Perry. So Sarah Perry is a British novelist. She is best known for her second book, The Essex Serpent, which was a big bestseller. But this book it's a gothic horror novel, which is something we don't see very often these days. It is centered around – the main character is named Helen Franklin, and she is a British expatriate who is living in Prague for reasons that aren't immediately apparent. And one night, coming home from work, she happens upon a friend of hers who is very distraught and clutching a sheaf of papers. So they retreat to a nearby restaurant, where he begins to tell her that he's become obsessed with this folktale called Melmoth. And the papers that he's carrying are different historical accounts of encounters with Melmoth. So Melmoth is a tale from folklore that is invented by Sarah Perry, although it's very loosely based on an older gothic horror novel. But Melmoth was one of the women in the New Testament who came to the empty tomb on the first Easter, but she alone among her companions denied the reality of the resurrection, and so she was doomed to wander the earth for eternity witnessing human atrocity. And so wherever people are doing truly terrible things, there is Melmoth to haunt the guilty. And if you've done something really terrible in your moment of deepest, most desperate guilt and shame, Melmoth might extend her hand to you and invite you to join her on her travels, because she's lonely.
our mark is a laugh a minute. God love
him. Yes, happy holidays to everyone.
Mm-hmm. Coal in the stockings.
It's a graphic novel, though.
It's not a graphic,
novel.
It's a prose novel. It's a very accomplished literary novel. It is a gothic horror novel in the traditional sense. Right. It uses all the tropes. You know, you have the streets of a city at dark. You have jackdaws on every windowsill in this novel. But more than that, it's a study of guilt and what is required for justice and the importance of just witnessing crime. So there's a scene in the center of the book that is indicative where a refugee is being led in chains through an airport in Britain, and he's just shouting as he goes through, regardez-moi, look at me, as he's going through. So this is a book about the importance of bearing witness to horror.
Melmoth, who is the author?
Sarah Perry.
Did you know her?
I didn't. Well, I was familiar with the Essex Serpent, but I hadn't read it.
Okay. Let's lighten the mood a little, shall we? But thank you, Mark. Robin Nisbet, you're always good for that.
Okay, I'll try. As I said, well, actually, the one I was going to talk about is called The 7.5 Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle by Stuart Turton.
Great.
Sorry. It's a mystery. Poor guy wakes up in the woods. He can't remember it's British. He's been invited to a British mansion out in the wilds for an evening for a weekend. And he's been punched, and he's got some scratches, and all of a sudden he hears a shot, and he has to relive his life seven ways in seven different characters at this British home. And it's a mystery. I mean, it's not historical, but it feels like those old, you know, you go away to the manor and the rich people have you for dinner and stuff like that. It was it's called The 7 Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle in England. And for some reason in America, we decided to call it The 7.5 Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle. But it didn't get a lot of press. But I think if you're a mystery reader like me, you're always looking for something a little different and a little off the beam. This one's a little off the beam.
Did it surprise you?
It did.
There was a twist in it that surprised you?
Oh,
yeah, that's great.
The whole
way
through. So I would recommend this to folks who like British or like mysteries, like British stuff, and are looking for something just a little bit different.
And who was the author?
Stuart Turton, T-U-R-T-O-N.
Okay, for your mystery fans, there you are. Our phone number is 614-292-8513, or you can send an email to allsides@wosu.org. Let us know your favorite book of the year. 614-292-8513 if you want to share the title of your favorite book. I'm going to ask Cassie Rose again while we're waiting for calls, if any, to talk about another favorite of yours.
I'm going to bring this book up too. It's not going to lighten things up a little bit, but a little smooth it out. It will. It's called Virgil Wander by Leif Anger. It looks like you pronounce his name Leif Anger, but it's actually Leif Anger. And this came out at the end of this year too. And I think that in another couple months, if I look back in this year, I am going to choose this book as a favorite because it's about a small town life. It's about the guy, Virgil Wander, who runs the Empress Movie Theater in this small town in Minnesota. He's in a car accident. His car flies off a cliff in a snowstorm and it goes into Lake Superior, and a beachcomber, you know, saves him. And so he's got a little bit of trouble with adjectives and with his balance and stuff. And then he goes into this. This is a recovery story. And it's also the recovery story of this Empress Movie Theater. But also what's going on around him is all the events in this town. And there's a little bit of mystical stuff going on, like there's this enormous fish and a man is drunk and fishing, and this fish pulls him underwater, and his kid vows revenge. So there's this revenge story going on, and there's a plague of voles, you know, running through the street. And it's not a bad thing. It's kind of this quirky, like, seriously kind of thing. And then, by the way, he'll mention the time it rained frogs in the town. So you get this sense of small town, and you just – it's not a novel of intrigue, of violence or love or drama. It's about small town life. Mm-hmm. And it's really about saying, you know what? Normal life doesn't have to be predictable. It doesn't have to be exciting and dramatic and famous and all of this. It just has to be genuine. And that's what's going on in this book. And that's why I love it. There's something – it's got a heart. And you love the – I loved the characters and just – felt like Leif Anger just brought me right into this book.
Clearly, there are some unusual situations, but you're very convinced by the writing and the characters.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's part of the charm.
And this author is known for his book Peace Like a River, which was a bestseller 10 years ago.
That was great.
So Virgil Wander by Leif Anger.
Virgil Wander, one of Cassie Rose's favorite books read in 2018. I'm going to throw one out there. I don't know if anyone else has read Ohio, the novel Ohio by Richard Markley, which traces sort of three or four high school classmates in, frankly, small town life where the opioid epidemic is rampant, where poverty is rampant, where all kinds of challenges are rampant. And it's like going back to your high school years and years later. And, you know, nobody really turned out well. Now, having said that and bringing down the crowd even more, I will say that there's enough about the writing of it that really glues you to the page. Mm-hmm. So and also it's not completely pessimistic. There are some wonderful surprises that happen on the way. And it's tied together very, very well by the writer Stephen Markley. Again, the title, easy to remember, is Ohio, and it is one of my picks for a 10 favorite of the year. If you'd like to share one of yours, give us a call to 614-292-8513 or send an email to allsides@wosu.org. Has anybody else read Manhattan Beach by Jennifer Egan?
I love that book. Yeah.
That's really one of my top five. Talk about Manhattan Beach a little bit.
Manhattan Beach is a historical novel by Jennifer Egan. I might not be the one most qualified to talk about it because I have to say I didn't like it as much as A Visit from the Goon Squad. It's about a young girl who kind of elbows her way into the sort of nascent art of deep sea diving, and she faces some prejudice
during
World along
War II,
the way.
Right, yeah.
Right. There's her father has disappeared mysteriously. He's got some mob connections. So part of the novel follows her entry into that world. And then another part of the novel kind of explores the kind of mobbed up world that her dad was a part of. So there are some sort of intersecting storylines there. For me, I think A Visit from the Goon Squad, which was her book of a couple of years ago, was much better because I thought the construction was really interesting. But it was quite popular.
I haven't read that, but I will say that Manhattan Beach was very convincing in terms of place and time, in terms of women going into the factories during the Second World War and having and even yet when they were needed to do this work, they were stopped from doing this work. And so the work wasn't getting done because they were women. Mm-hmm. And this one young woman said, I don't think so. And did the most dangerous kind of underwater work that really people died from doing. And she doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And it was very convincing the way they would suit her up. The equipment is very light, but it was fascinating how this entire suit that she had to put on and how heavy it was and all the equipment she had to take down, which was why they would think women weren't able to do it. But yeah, she pushed herself through it and succeeded.
She also had to trust the men who didn't want her to do it to haul her back up. You know,
yeah.
I mean, she really had to put herself in their hands. And all of that I thought was very, very convincingly done by Jennifer Egan. Again, the title is Manhattan Beach. We have a call from, we have several calls. Chris in Galena has a recommendation. Hello, Chris in Galena.
Hi, love the show.
Thank you.
My favorite this year was American Wolf, a true story of survival and obsession in the West by Nate Blakesley. And it was how wolves were reintroduced into Yellowstone.
Really? Talk about it a little bit. Yeah.
What was really fun about reading it is that you can actually go to the Nat Geo channel or to YouTube, and then you can see a little documentary, and you can see the wolf, and you can see, like how it really happened. And then just last week in the paper, the main character, Wolf, who was killed, her daughter was killed the same way that her mother was killed.
Oh.
So it's just, it's great.
The book is American Wolf by Nate Blakesley, is that right?
Yes.
Thank you very much, Chris, for that recommendation. If you would like to share your favorite read of 2018, 614-292-8513, or you can send an email to allsides@wosu.org. We have a call from Julie in Lewis Center. Hi, Julie. Go ahead.
Hi. First of all, I look forward to this program, and so I thank you for all of your recommendations.
Thank you.
I keep a paper by my phone to write all the lists down. But my you wanted to go a little bit lighter, and a book that I enjoyed this year was Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine by Gail Honeyman, and I had read it in between some really heavier books, like They're There, and I needed something uplifting, and it's kind of quirky. It makes you laugh. It's also a mystery, and so I found it very refreshing.
Great. I love the part about make you laugh. Thank you for that, given the tone of the program. Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine by Gail Honeyman, and I saw some nods of recognition from Robin Nesbitt.
Yeah, it's been popular. That's another one, can't keep it on our shelves. It definitely starts with a quirky young character. I kind of skim read it. I haven't actually read it myself, but a lot of my library friends across the country have read it and really enjoyed it. So, I haven't seen it on our shelves, so it's always got a holds list. So it's really popular.
Thank you so much. We appreciate the recommendation very much. We have some emails. We have a recommendation from Sam, Flights by Olga Tokarczuk, and I'm saying that wrong, T-O-K-A-R. CZUK. Okay, Flights. Tam in Dublin, I would recommend two books, The Hummingbird by Stephen Kiernan and After the Fire. After the Fire, I did read and thought I liked it very much by Laura Belfer. That was a terrific book, yes.
Heard of both of those, but I haven't.
Love hearing the recommendations. And Carl, I recommend anything by Dorothy Hughes or A.A. Fair. We're all learning something here, so that's really good. Gemma in Columbus has a recommendation of a book that's currently quite hot right now. Hi, Gemma, go ahead.
Hi, I recommend The Library Book by Susan Orland. It's a wonderful book. It's about the fire in 1980s that damaged a large part of the Los Angeles Central Library.
Yeah, it's a book. It's a love story to libraries as well. The library, which Robin Nesbitt, God love you. The library book by Susan Orlean. It's on a lot of lists, and it's
good.
It may be a quick pick. I'm not sure, but
I can't remember if it's a quick pick. She talks about the fire, but she also talks about the quirky librarians that were the directors at LAPL, and just people think us librarians are quiet and we wear glasses and we have buns, and man, there were some real nut jobs that started. Started that library system out there in LA. So it's a good read. It goes back and forth between the history of Los Angeles Public Library and the downtown library and then the fire that occurred and trying to figure out who started the fire and was it malicious or was it an accident? Yeah, it's a good read. It was fun.
And in case anybody wonders, we do have quirky and wonderful libraries who wear glasses here in Columbus.
Right.
We're going to take a break and come back shortly with the final segment of the best reads of 2018. I hope you're writing all these down. Don't go away. Welcome back. All Sides Weekend, we're talking about everybody's favorite reads of 2018. If you'd like to share, people have been calling. We welcome your call, 614-292-8513, or send an email, allsides@wosu.org. I'm going to throw out another favorite of mine, Bad Blood, Secrets and Lies in Silicon Valley by John Carreyrou, which is a nonfiction book. It is about a young woman who, at the age of 19, set up a billion-dollar corporation in Silicon Valley and patented a process by which you could test your blood at home, and the whole thing was a fraud. And people were being misdiagnosed. People were getting sicker. There was a lot of money made, and then the whole house of cards, thankfully, came tumbling down. And it's the story of that, and it is a real thriller. It's nonfiction, but I mean, I was going to YouTube looking for the press conferences and things like that, and the the interviews with the people involved, and the young woman and her associates, I believe, are headed to the Juzgado. But again, it's a great read, Bad Blood, Secrets and Lies in Silicon Valley by John Carreyrou. We discussed something earlier. This is not a new book. This is a book that's been around for 30 years. That I think I read when it was new, but I read it this past year, and I'm still trying to get off the high of it. A Prayer for Owen Meany by John Irving, and everybody's smiling. Out there, America, if you haven't read this book, do yourself a favor and read A Prayer for Owen Meany. Why?
It's John Irving's best novel. John Irving is a great American novelist. A Prayer for Owen Meany is probably his best novel. I would argue that it's his best novel because if John Irving has a flaw, it's that he doesn't stick the landing. He's not good at writing endings. Mm-hmm. A Prayer for Owen Meany is the one book of John Irving's, other than maybe The World According to Garp, where he clearly knew where that thing was going to go by the moment he started it, and it shows. It's a really tightly plotted, wonderful, heartwarming book with a great main character who speaks in all caps.
He's a great character. And they made a movie of it that didn't work because I don't think you really can make a movie from that book.
Right.
I really don't think. But if you want a terrific read and a feel-good book, that's a great book, A Prayer for Owen Meany by John Irving. So there, Cassie Rose. So cheer us up. What do you have for us?
I'm going to talk about a book that I just finished, actually. And so I don't know if it's really one of my favorites for the year, but I want to bring it up for another reason. It's called City of Thieves by David Benioff. It was published 10 years ago, so some of the listeners might have already read it. It's a great book. And it's about, you know, the setting is a difficult setting, but it's a great book and it's not all that dire. So when I say that it's taking place during the siege of Leningrad and it's about two boys.
Oh, my God. Here we go.
No, but here it is. It's about two boys who, for the colonel, need to find a dozen eggs so that he can make a cake for his daughter's wedding. And here, you know, the Nazis have surrounded Leningrad. So it is them going out to get these eggs. What makes this book so successful, I think also what it was very popular when it first came out, is that he allows the writer does bring lightness and humor into it because one of the boys who is a soldier, I mean, he just has this gift to bring humor into and lightness into difficult situations, which really you need to do when you're in. If you can be humorous about something during a time of great fear, you know, you're probably going to make it through. So it's just got a lot of adventure to it. It's got a lot of color and to it in terms of what happens to the characters. It's a page-turner. It's also heartwarming, and despite this, the atmosphere, and it's a great story. The reason I want to do a little bit of a connection here, and the reason I read this book is because I met with someone from the Columbus Symphony. They wanted to a list of books about the Siege of Leningrad because part of their winter festival, the first weekend of January, they are performing the Leningrad Symphony by Shostakovich, which is the Great Seventh, which he composed during the Siege of Leningrad. And it is a marvelous piece that brought the nation together during the siege while they were being bombarded by the Nazis, because the premiere was still in 1942, I think it was. And it's a great story also about how his symphony was secreted out of Russia past the German lines down through Africa and Argentina, and they got this microfilm to New York City, and they thought they were going to get this big secret, and here is this symphony. So there's a great story behind it. But also I think, and having read this book and reading about several other books as I was working with the symphony, is I came to understand that I think it's beautiful music on just as a standalone, but to know the story, not only about how the symphony came to be, but also what went on in Leningrad and how the people survived. I mean, it's a horrific story, but to know it, I think the music means more to your heart and soul when you hear it.
People may know that my day job is with Classical 101 across the hall, so I can tell you with good authority, frankly, that it is a magnificent piece of music, Shostakovich's Seventh Symphony, and the opportunity to hear it live, having read that book, will be very, very important. Again, the book is called City of Thieves.
By David Benioff. I also have just put the list on my blog of the books that I recommended to the symphony, who in a marketing effort was reaching out to the libraries and bookstores to put some of these books or other books on the end caps about the siege so that you can read it. So that was sort of that energy there. And then I thought I would share the books on my blog that I shared with them.
The book, the blog is thelongestchapter.com.
Yes.
Which people should check every week anyway. All right. Thank you very much for that recommendation. How about 99 Glimpses of Princess Margaret, to going from the sublime to the kind of less sublime, which is a nonfiction book by a man named Craig Brown. And it is 99 little chapters. Sometimes there's only one paragraph. Sometimes there's maybe three pages of the life of the younger sister of the Queen of England. Not always affectionately portrayed, but if you want something that's fun and witty and interesting, and if you're a junkie for The Crown on HBO then or Netflix, then this is something you might enjoy. Also, Cassie Rose, do you remember Waiting for Eden by Elliot Ackerman?
Yes, I love that book.
Which is a book you recommend. It's on my list, too. That's about the soldier who is in bed, unable to communicate.
He's
a burn victim. And everything that goes around, as his wife sits vigil, it's everything that goes on around him.
And she adores him.
She does,
And stays with him.
Yeah.
And it's that controversy of... what do you do? What is the kindness for him and there, and also what you need, though, too?
Right, and there's a conflict there with her, and it's very heartrending. I did not find it a depressing book at all. Mm-mm. It's a very positive book. Again, the title, Waiting for Eden by Elliot Ackerman. So, Mark Maxwell, we've gotten rid of Princess Margaret and Owen Meany. What do you got for us?
I wanted to recommend an ongoing comic series that I have very much enjoyed this year. This is something the booksellers are really into right now. I had to be kind of dragged into it kicking and screaming because it's ostensibly for kids. It's called Lumberjanes. And it's an ongoing series. It's written by a crack team of comic artists and writers, but it is the brainchild of a woman named Grace Ellis, who's a local comic writer. So shout out to her. And it's an ongoing series about a bunch of young campers at a camp called Miss Quinzella Thisquin Paniquiquil Thistle Crumpets Camp for Hardcore Lady Types.
Say that three times.
I am sitting with that in front of me because I don't think I could have done that from memory. So it centers on the inhabitants of Cabin Roanoke and their adventures. So surrounding this camp, there are a bunch of mythological creatures. So we've got yetis. There's a sea monster. There's some three-eyed foxes. There are puzzles to solve. There are friendships to be made. It's got a lot of energy. It's super fun. And again, while it's ostensibly for kids, it's very enjoyable for adults because this book is a monument to feminist history and culture. So the head of the camp is a character named Rosie, who's clearly an homage to Rosie the Riveter. These girls casually name drop the names of feminist icons, some of which I had to run to Google for. That if something goes wrong, they might shout "Holy Mae Jemison" in a reference to one of the early female astronauts. It's heartwarming. It's written. I think it's fair to say it's written for young women, but I would recommend it to people of all ages, and I would recommend it to young men as well because I do think that it's important for young men to get that perspective on what's going on with women. I know I learned a lot more from Nancy Drew than I did from the Hardy Boys.
I think
Boys.
I'm going to buy that from my daughter, who's an adult. Seriously.
You should.
Tell me again the title and
it's
the
called Lumberjanes. So it is an ongoing series, and it's occasionally collected between hardcovers. The first volume is called Beware the Kitten Holy, which is a great place to start if you're interested in checking out Lumberjanes.
Lumberjanes is all you need to remember for that.
Right.
And it is a series, and it sounds like it would be a very good gift.
Oh, yeah, I would think so.
Excellent gift.
Yeah.
Thank you for that recommendation. We are talking about people's favorite reads from 2018, including yours, and including Robin Nesbitt from the Columbus Library.
I have a nonfiction title. After I said I liked mysteries, I looked at my list, and like, not very many mysteries made the top of that list there. But I read Educated by Tara Westover, which has been talked about all year, I think. And I continually amazed that this woman, she's a family, Christian Scientist. She was raised, I forget, out west. I forget what.
Idaho.
Thank you, Idaho. Yeah. They were junkers. So like their dad would, get old cars and, strip the metal. And a scene that stuck with me out of the book was she basically talks about her life and talks about her family, talks about living in Idaho, talks about being Christian Scientists. Her dad, salvages scrap metal. And there's a scene where he's like, you have to puncture the gas tanks to get the gas out. And he gets covered in gas. He keeps working. A fire sparks somehow from a metal and he just catches on fire. Do they go to the emergency room? No. Mom just doctors them. I just shook my head that this family survived. And dad's pretty violent. It's a tough life. She manages to survive and get out. They don't have any formal schooling. The kids aren't sent to school. But she gets to BYU. She gets her undergraduate. And then she goes on to Oxford.
Are they homeschooled at all?
She
learned to read. By the way, this is nonfiction.
Correct.
And it's a contemporary story.
Correct.
It's today.
Correct.
Right. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah, she's out there. She's a professor somewhere.
Yeah.
I just couldn't believe it. And she, at one point, is sitting at BYU, and they are talking about World War II, and they're talking about the Nazis. And she asks a question that offends the professor because he thinks that she's having him on. She honestly had no idea about World War II and about the Nazi concentration camps. And so, and again, so it's just amazing that where she came from and where she ended up, and that this is all completely true. If you pitch this as a movie or a TV show, somebody'd say, oh no, that could never work. But it's amazing. It's a page turner. I mean, it's nonfiction. It reads like a novel. She's a fabulous writer. PBS picked it as one of their book clubs books this year. I can't recommend it highly enough. And it's another one I never see on our shelves at the library.
Educated by Kara Westover. And I think Michelle Obama nudged her off number one of the bestseller list, but she's number two now.
Yeah.
Certainly, yeah. But I mean, I've seen people carrying that book around. I've seen it in the gym. I've people reading it. So, and I think I'm number 875 on the library list to get it.
It must be a quick pick.
So keep your eyes peeled for that. Cassie Rose, give me another one. We have a few minutes left.
In Love by Alfred Hayes. It's an NYRB Classics book. Came out in the 1940s or 50s. Small book. It's just wonderful, just about a man telling about his affair with a young woman in New York City. And the turning point comes when, I mean, she wants to be more involved than he does. He's sort of a little off about it, wants it just routine.
How like a man?
Yes. Well, anyway, the story turns when she is at a bar one night while he's not seeing her with friends. And a very wealthy man asks her to dance and he offers her $1,000 back then, which was a lot of money, to spend the night with him. And so, of course, that's the turning point. And so what goes forward, I don't want to give it away. But it's a great story, especially because of this narrator, what it brings out in this man who's obsessed with her, but he doesn't want to commit to her. His jealousy, his anger, it just rings really true. It's done very well. Small book.
Tell me again about – I've asked you before, but just review for us that imprint because that's a wonderful imprint.
NYRB Classics.
Yeah, what do they do?
They bring back into print books that have gone out of print that really shouldn't have gone out of print. That's sort of the easy explanation, and they call it the classics. And so there you can find this gold mine of wonderful books that – just have been hidden because nobody is bringing them out nobody is publishing them anymore. So In Love by Alfred Hayes is one of them. I brought another one called Chess Story by Stefan Zweig. They also have a book club so that you can sign up to get – it was like Book of the Month Club used to be. And they'll send you a book a month that they have printed. So it's great. It's classic books that have just that are no longer sitting on the shelf, but they are because of them.
I tend to be attracted to that imprint, and I look for what they recommend more than specific titles because I don't know any of the titles because, as you said, they've been out of circulation sometimes for 50 years. And I've never been disappointed when I've picked up one of that imprint. So you might want to write that down out there.
NYRB Classics, New York Review Book Classics.
NYRB Classics. Look at anything imprint like that, and I guarantee you won't be disappointed. We have 3 minutes left, enough time for everybody to review once again so everybody gets it, your top pick of the year, your absolute favorite book written in 2018, Mark Maxwell.
Sorry, Robin. They're There by Tommy Orange.
Ditto.
No. All right. Then what's Robin Nesbitt's second favorite pick?
Well, it was Educated. I really liked Becoming by Michelle Obama. I have read that, and I really recommend that to everyone to get.
I did buy that from my daughter.
I purchased it too. I was just like, I have to own this. I'm going to look at it again, reread it. She's just a wonderful role model for women and young girls across the country.
There's no hysteria in that book,
when
there could have been. But it's very sort of, you're sitting next to her having a beer or having a cup of coffee. Kyle, my man Kyle McKinnon, who runs the show for us, his favorite, God love him, is Profiles in Courage by John F. Kennedy.
Oh, wow.
He's a young guy, and I'm so impressed by that because, a lot of us grew up reading that book and remembered it. Profiles in Courage, good book to remember there. Cassie Rose, again, favorite.
Theory of Bastards by Audrey Shulman.
Why?
Because of the protagonist and the near future setting.
This is the one about the chimpanzees.
Yes,
right?
And the bonobos.
The bonobos. Okay. Mm-hmm. And okay, you said They're There. Mm-hmm. You said
Becoming by Michelle Obama.
Michelle Obama. And my favorite book of the year, I just lost the list. Oh, my God. Owen Meany, I don't want to count because that's a 40-year-old book, although I loved it so much. I'd have to say The Oberstory by Richard Powers, which is the book about several people's love affair with trees, which sounds a little sort of airy and whatever. But seriously, the writing was so rich and so beautiful. You have to take your time with this book. This book slows you down in a very, very good way so that if you're a little bit, shall we say, high energy in an inappropriate way, this book will help you a great deal. That is our show for today. I thank very much Cassie Rose, who is WOSU's book critic. Her blog is thelongestchapter.com. I'll see you at the symphony for the Leningrad Symphony. Robin Nesbitt is the manager of the Hilliard branch of the Columbus Library, and she brings us quick picks and her favorites. Quick picks are out on Tuesday mornings, right?
Correct.
Okay. And Mark Maxwell is the regional manager for Half Price Books, the source for all your holiday shopping. Thank you all so much. Thank you, Kyle McKinnon, Mr. Profiles in Courage, who took his hat off and showed us his new hair. Thank you very much. On our phone, we had the indispensable Martin Coleman, Kaylin Martin, Maisie Glockner, and thank you, Ray Brewster. And thank you all. I'm Christopher Purdy. Happy holidays.